I recognize the numbers 1 through 3 because they match the scars on my ankle. But the others are new to me. What's Sam's birthday again? I ask.
January 4th, 1995.
The triangle clicks like a lock as I turn it right to the Lorik number 1. I turn it left, swallowing hard as I aim it at what must be number 4. My number. Then I rotate the triangle to 1, 9, back around to 9 again, and 5. Nothing happens for a few seconds, and then the sundial begins to hiss and smoke. 6 and I step back and watch as the stone lid of the well flips back and opens with a loud, echoing crack. When the smoke clears, I see a ladder inside. Sam is jumping up and down near the fence, one hand over his mouth, the other raised in a fist. One of the dark windows of the house turns yellow. Bernie Kosar lets out 2 long "Whoos!" from the roof. Before I can think, 6 yanks me forward, and soon I'm visible and descending the ladder inside the well. 6 follows, pulling the lid almost closed above her. I illuminate my palms and see we're 20 feet from a cement floor.
"What about Sam?" I whisper.
"He'll be fine. Bernie Kosar's up there."
We reach the floor and find ourselves in a short hallway that curves to the left. The air is musty. I shine my palms back and forth as we walk through the curve. And when the hallway straightens again, we see there's a room ahead with a cluttered desk and hundreds of papers pinned to the wall. I'm about to run inside, but that's when my lights catch a long white object in the doorway.
"Is that?"
6 trails off. I'm stuck in my tracks. It's an enormous bone. 6 pushes me forward, and I pull the dagger from my back pocket.
"Ladies first?" I offer.
"Not this time."
With a running start, I jump over the bone and immediately light up the room with my hands. A yell escapes my mouth as I take in the skeleton sitting against the wall. 6 jumps inside, and when she sees it, she stumbles backwards into the desk. The skeleton is over 8 feet tall, with giant feet and hands. Thick blonde hair falls from the top of its skull and reaches past its wide shoulder blades. Around its neck hangs a blue pendant, similar to mine.
"That's not Sam's dad," 6 says.
"Definitely not."
"Then who is it?"
I step forward and examine the pendant. The blue laurelite stone is slightly larger than mine, but everything else is the same. I stare at it and feel an overwhelming connection to whoever this was. "I'm not sure, but I think he was a friend." I reach over his head and retrieve the pendant, handing it to 6. We move to the desk. I don't know where to start. A heavy layer of dust covers stacks of papers and writing utensils. The writing on the papers pinned to the wall above the desk is in every language but English. I recognize a few Lorik numbers, but nothing else. A white electronic tablet sits on a dilapidated wooden chair, and I pick it up and press my fingers over its black screen. Nothing happens. 6 opens the top drawer to find more papers, and as she grabs the second drawer's handle, an explosion above ground knocks us off our feet. A long crack travels along the room's ceiling, and then the concrete buckles. Chunks fall all around us.
"Run!" I yell.
With the pendant around her neck, 6 tears a dozen papers from the wall, and I stuff the white tablet in the back of my waistband. We scramble up the ladder and peek out the sliver of space between the well and the sundial. Dozens of Moogs. Smoldering fires. Bernie Kosar has transformed himself into a tiger with the curling horns of a ram. A Moog's arm is in his teeth.
Sam is no longer at the fence, and neither is my chest. I'm about to burst out of the well when Six launches herself past me in a tornado of clouds. The sundial lid whips backwards, and she rips through a huddle of five Moogs, sending them across the yard. I pull myself out of the well and close it as she picks up a gleaming Moog sword, turning invisible. I use my telekinesis to toss three armed Moogs standing near the well against the house. They explode into thick ash, and when I turn, I see a shirtless man frozen in the back door with a shotgun in his hands. Behind him stands Sam's frightened mom in a nightgown. Six materializes next to two Moogs running at me with glowing cannons, and she swings the sword through both their necks. Then she uses her telekinesis to throw the wheelbarrow at another, turning him into a pile of ash. I toss two Moogs against another, and Six impales all three in one quick motion. Bernie Kosar leaps into the middle of the yard and digs his teeth into a few Moogs struggling to their feet. "Where's Sam?" I yell. "Here!" I twist to see Sam lying on his stomach under a charred shrub. Blood runs down his scalp.
"Sam!"
his mom yells from the doorway. He struggles to his knees.
"Mom!"
His mom yells again, but a Moog reaches down and pulls Sam up by his shirt. I concentrate and uproot the rusty swing set, but before one of its metal poles can spear the Moog in the chest, he tosses Sam over the fence. With an intensity I've never seen in her before, Six slices through the remaining Moogs. She's covered in ash when she jumps over the fence after Sam. I leap onto Bernie Kosar, and we follow. Sam is on his back in the neighbor's yard. Motion sensor lights flood over him. I jump off Bernie Kosar and pick him up. "Sam, are you okay? Where's my chest?" He opens his eyes halfway.
"They got it. I'm sorry, John."
"There!"
Six points to several Moogs running through a field towards the forest. I set Sam on Bernie Kosar's back, but he pushes himself off.
"I'm okay, I swear."
From the other side of the fence, Sam's mom yells,
"Sam!"
"I'll be back, Mom. I love you."
And then he's the first to run towards the Moogs. Six and I catch up easily, but she veers right to plunge her sword into an approaching Moog. Four more are 30 yards ahead of her, and with the large pendant bouncing around her neck, she charges, with Bernie Kosar at her heels. Sam and I enter the muddy field, and two Moogs cut off our path. Over my shoulder, I see two more separating and marching in our direction at strategic angles. The others have entered the forest at two different sections, and I can't see who has the chest. I pull the dagger out of my back pocket. The handle wraps around my hand. I run ahead, and the two Moogs in front of me run too, their swords bouncing and cutting into the empty field behind them. When we're less than 5 yards apart, I leap with my dagger above my head. As I start to fall, a huge tree zips underneath me, ramming both Moogs and killing them. Six. As I hit the ground again, I turn to see her running towards Sam and the two Moogs who circle him. The one on Sam's left tackles him around the waist. Six tears the Moog off and throws him far into the field, where he immediately gets back on his feet and charges. I sneak up behind the other Moog and hammer my dagger into the back of his neck, pulling it out at an angle that slices down through his shoulder blade. He falls to a pile of ash that blows onto my shoes. Bernie Kosar pounces on the other Moog, and quickly, he has a tongue coated in thick ash.
"We have to get back to the car and get out of here," Six says. "There must be more on their way. They were waiting for us."
"We have to get my chest first," I say.
"Then we're going to have to split up," Six says.
With her soot-covered sword, she points at the two sections of forest the Moogs disappeared into.
"Bernie Kosar, you're with me."
Bernie Kosar shrinks into a hawk, and he and Six had left. Sam and I enter the forest in the other direction. Soon we hear twigs cracking, and we run in that direction.
I speed ahead and hurdle a series of dead trees to see four Moogs trying to escape through a small clearing. In the moonlight, I still can't see if any of them hold my chest. I slide down the hill on my side, crushing saplings, creating a small landslide of loose rock. I hear Sam crashing after me. They're halfway through the small clearing. It's dense, with grass 6 feet tall, and I run through it at full speed. Sam yells for me to tell him what direction I'm headed in, but instead, I keep running and aim my lit palm straight up into the sky as a beacon.
Okay, got it, he yells.
Finally, right before the clearing becomes forest again, I can almost reach one. I dive for his legs and slice through the bottom of his muddy khakis and sever his Achilles tendon, causing him to roar onto his back. I climb up his flailing body and stab him in the chest, killing him. Sam trips over my legs and falls on his face.
You get it?
No, come on. Using one hand as a flashlight and the other as a machete, I race through the forest with ease, not caring how close Sam stays behind me. In less than a minute, I see another Moog struggling over a fallen log. From 25 yards away, I lift the log high off the ground, tip it, and force the Moog to teeter and fall head first. I crash through weeds to find him motionless on his stomach. I can already tell he doesn't have my chest. I kill him with 2 stabs of my dagger.
John!
Sam yells in the darkness.
Dude!
I again shine my palm in the air, and I'm scanning the trees when Sam arrives.
Tell me you got it.
Not yet, I say.
No chest, Sam mutters.
I just hope Six had better luck. I reach behind me and pull the white tablet out to show Sam. But I do have this. He grabs it out of my hand.
From the well?
That's not all we found. Wait until I tell you what else. I suddenly recognize where we are. I stop walking. I even stop breathing. Sam grabs my shoulder and says,
Whoa, dude. What's going on? You feeling something? Like maybe somebody just opened your chest?
As far as I can tell, my chest hasn't been opened. The feeling brewing inside me is something entirely different.
We're near Sarah's house.
Chapter 22. After the door at the bottom of the tower creaks open, I hear footsteps. I hear echoed breathing. Whoever it is, it'll be impossible to hide a drugged Adelina, a cat, and a chest stuffed with alien weapons and artifacts. I slowly set the branch back into the chest and close the lid. Legacy creeps to the edge of the belfry floor and then sits and stares down into the darkness. We're all silent. But then Adelina rolls out a long, droning snore. The footsteps in the circular stairway speed up. I give Adelina a few shakes to wake her up. She falls onto her side. What do I do? I mouth to Legacy. The cat jumps on top of the chest and then jumps back off again, only to purr around my feet. It isn't an answer, but it does give me an idea. I lean down and set Legacy on top of the chest and then scramble up into one of the 2 windows where the cool air penetrates my pajamas and instantly causes my teeth to chatter. The footsteps are getting closer. With my mind, I raise the chest high in the air, and Legacy's claws scrape at the lid for a safe footing. I have to duck as I float the chest up and over me and out the window. Immediately after, I set the chest quietly on the frosty lawn 10 stories below. Legacy jumps off and runs into the darkness. I then float Adelina up and over me, her nightgown brushing the top of my head, and carefully I set her down next to the chest. The footsteps are loud now. I swing my legs over the edge of the window. Using whatever concentration I can still muster, I am able to levitate myself a few centimeters above the cold stone. I push out into the swirling wind. Before I lower myself away from the tower, I see the mustached Mogadorian from the cafe round the last turn of the stairway and stomp into the belfry. My concentration buckles, and then snaps into a million little pieces. I go into a wild freefall until the last moment, when I press my hands in front of my chest and set my mind on floating like a feather. My right knee lands a hair from Adelina's shivering body. I panic. I either have to try to get the chest and Adelina down into the village for hiding, but it is the middle of the night, and we are in our night clothes, and I can only see a few lonely windows lit in town. Or I have to quickly find a place to hide us within the orphanage. It will take the Mogadorian less time to descend the tower than it did for him to race up it. But he still has a long hallway to travel and another flight of stairs to run down to make it to the first floor. I stick my head through the double doors, and once I see the coast is clear, I drape Adelina over the chest and float them into the nave. My strength is waning immensely, but I am somehow able to summon just enough power to get the chest, Adelina, and me tucked away up into the farthest recess of the drafty, cold, and damp nook where the chest had originally been hidden. I am beginning to think I led the Mogadorian right to me by opening the chest. Perhaps the red pulse of the crystal I dropped is some kind of transmitter. Adelina will know what it is, what to do. To combat the fear that an evil, alien race is coming directly for me, to somehow apologize to Adelina for drugging her, and to gather a little warmth, I rest my head on Adelina's chest and wrap my arms around her waist. Hours later, I hear Adelina grunt and shuffle her legs underneath mine. "Adelina," I whisper. "Are you awake?" "Who is that?" "Marina?" I whisper. "Adelina, you have to be really, really quiet."
"Why?"
she whispers.
"And where are we?"
"We're in the nave where you hid the chest. But please listen to me. They're here. The Mogadorians came for me last night after I opened the chest. And I had to hide us."
"How did you open up the chest by yourself?"
"It doesn't work that way."
"You told me how to do it. You were sleep-talking."
I lie. I could tell her I drugged her, but I'm not ready for that argument. Her confusion is evident in her voice.
"I don't remember. I remember getting out of bed, and then I guess that's about it."
"You opened up the chest? What was inside?"
"A lot of things, Adelina. So much. There are all these stones and all these jewels, and one of them lit up in my hand and started flashing. And I think that's why the Mogadorian showed up."
"What Mogadorian? What happened?" Adelina tries to sit up, but I stop her before she hits her head on the low ceiling. I whisper, "I saw a man in the cafe a few days ago who had a book about Pittacus, and he kept staring at me. He had this hat on and this big mustache, and I could just tell he was from Mogador. And then, last night, after I opened the chest in the North Belfry, he showed up."
"How did we escape?"
"I used my telekinesis to float us out the window and into the yard, and then I used it to get us up here."
"We have to get out of here," she whispers.
"We have to leave Santa Teresa immediately." My excitement is immediate. I hug her in the dark, and to my surprise, she hugs me back. Adelina crawls to the lip of the nook, and I follow her with the chest hovering behind me. When the nave appears empty, Adelina asks me to lower her to the floor. Then I carefully drop the chest over the lip and set it silently next to Adelina's bare feet. I am about to levitate down when Sister Dora appears at the back of the nave and marches towards Adelina.
"Where have you been?" she barks. "You left your post all night. How could you do such a thing? And what is this luggage doing in here?"
I had to get some fresh air, Sister Dora.